You're listening to Bottom Shelf Bitcoin, episode 10. Relax. Enjoy your coffee. Okay. Hey, buddy. Good morning, everyone. Take a chill pill.
What is it? Okay. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Bottom Shelf Bitcoin, the podcast that puts Bitcoin knowledge within everyone's reach. As always, I'm your host, Josh Humphrey, and today we are finally talking about the Lightning Network. I know we've been talking about the Lightning Network for a while now, but we're actually talking about it today. So I considered doing like a very technical breakdown of the process and how everything works, and honestly, I can't come up with a way that's not going to put you to sleep. Because it is kind of technical if you want to go that route, and I just don't think that is probably the best thing for an audio podcast. I think it lends itself a lot better to visual media, a lot better to if you want to read the verbiage, if you want to, you can read the technical papers if you want to. I still find that kind of daunting, and so what I am going to do is we're going to do a very broad kind of 1,000-foot view summary here. And then I'm going to really recommend that you go and look through the infographics on Bitcoin Designed that talk about the Lightning Network. There's several of them on there that talk about all these different steps. And I think if you go through those, it explains it and has enough visuals that's really helpful for you to understand. So I want to recommend those for two reasons. One is that I think they're helpful. I looked through them several times when I was kind of figuring out how to explain some of this stuff. And then the other thing is Patricia, one of the people involved, the woman involved doing the design side of those infographics, is going to be on the show next episode. So it'll kind of give you a brief introduction into some of her work. Lightning is what we call a layer 2 scaling solution for Bitcoin. So if you remember from the episode where Clark Moody was on and he and I were talking about the scaling debate and talking about going back a few years, all of the issues and people leaving Bitcoin or starting these other projects, some of them relatively friendly, some of them downright contentious, about trying to find solutions for the scaling. Remember, Bitcoin got very expensive. It also got slow because so many people were using it. So there were all these solutions proposed, and some of them were considerate of people, and many of them were not. Many of them seemed to be an attempt to co-opt the network. So Lightning is totally voluntary, but it's a great solution. So it's basically another network of channels between nodes, not the main blockchain nodes, but it's a separate system of nodes that have bidirectional channels, meaning channels that can both receive and send payments. And because you have the system of nodes that can send and receive payments, and each node can have channels to multiple other nodes, you can create a system of routing between nodes. And so you can send and receive payments from nodes that you aren't directly connected to. Okay, so how do you create a channel between you and someone else? Well, basically, it is created by a mutually funded multi-signature wallet. Remember, a multi-signature wallet just means that it is a wallet that requires multiple signatures to spend from. So it can be a simple two-party signature wallet, or it can be require however many you really want, you really set it up to, and you can actually set it up like an M of N style wallet where you can require 2 out of 3 signatures. You have 3 valid signatures and you require 2 of those or 3 of 5 or whatever. And you can do things like a protection plan basically for yourself, for your big savings, where no one could ever put a gun to your head and say, I need you to empty all your Bitcoin into my wallet because you don't have sufficient keys with you at any one time to do that, where you would have other keys at either trusted individuals' houses or maybe in a safety deposit box or something like that. You could also have a multi-signature wallet set up for maybe a company so that a certain number of board members are required to spend funds from accounts or something like that. So let's get back. So a channel is created when these two parties mutually fund a multi-signature wallet, and that transaction, that's called an opening transaction, and that is actually recorded on the blockchain. And then from there, you've got this series of update payments that are agreed upon by the two involved parties, and basically sending that money that they funded that original multi-signature wallet back and forth between them. And these updates don't actually get recorded to the blockchain. And every time a new update is put out and agreed upon, it invalidates the update before that. And so if you were going to try and scam the other party involved and go back to a previous update, well, one, you wouldn't go back to an update. It wouldn't make sense for you. You wouldn't have the desire to go back to an update in which you had less money. So the only person who would be incentivized to go to an update previously is if it was an update where they had more money previously and now they have less based on the newest update. But if you tried to, so basically at any time, anyone can, you know, pull the lever, so to speak, not literally, but and say, hey, I want to end this, I want to close this channel here. And at that point, it drops back and creates a closing transaction on the main blockchain. Now, if you tried to do that for a previous transaction, a previous update that's earlier where you had more money, the way that it works is basically, if you tried to scam the other party, basically it would lock you out for a certain amount of time. And so let's say the channel was funded with 4 Bitcoins. We're using big numbers here just because it's even and it's simple math. Obviously these are huge amounts right now, and we probably wouldn't do that. But, you know, just for the sake of our theoretical argument and simple math, let's say 4 Bitcoins for each person, giving a total of 8 Bitcoin that can be transacted across this channel. Okay, so let's say that you and I have this 8 channel. I'm sorry, let's say that you and I have this 8 Bitcoin channel, and in the previous transaction, the previous update, I had 6 Bitcoin and you had 2. Well, then I pay you 2 Bitcoin, and that puts us both back at 4. But let's say I'm trying to try and scam you and go back to the update before this where I had 6. If I do that, what happens is that this multi-sig wallet then locks me out for a certain amount of time, and I don't know how customizable that time frame is, but let's just, for our argument's sake, say that it's a week, okay? So now you have a week, because I've already signed my half, you have a week to go in with your signature and you can unlock it and you can sweep all 8 Bitcoin. Okay, so now I am actually worse off than if I had just paid you. And so in this way, it disincentivizes scamming. This is a very broad explanation, a very surface level explanation of how this time locks work and how it keeps people from trying to scam each other. Like I said, go back, look through the Bitcoin designed infographics. They do a much better, much more technical job of explaining why this works. But like I said, it would be kind of boring probably to listen to me sit there. And honestly, they do such a good job, I'd basically be reading those anyways. Because the technical papers are too technical, definitely over the top, too technical to read on here. And if you're going to listen to somebody read it, you might as well read it yourself and get the benefit of having the pictures and stuff there. So let's see. So basically you have this kind of side network, and what happens is you can essentially infinitely send money back and forth across this channel. Or if you're connected to someone who's connected to them, you send the money back there, and it creates this system of hops back and forth. And so rather than, if you and I are going to be doing a lot of business back and forth, rather than having to pay transaction fees back and forth the whole time, every time we do business, we can do, let's say, 100 transactions in Bitcoin across the Lightning Network, and we pay transactions on the opening and the closing transactions of that channel. So we pay transaction fees only 2 times versus 100 times. The other thing is that with this routing system, we can do what's called onion routing, which is what the Tor network is based on. If you don't know what Tor is a routing system to obfuscate your IP address so that it's more difficult to figure out where you are connecting to the internet from. Okay, and so the Lightning Network kind of mimics this onion routing system and makes it more difficult to see where the payment came from, especially when you get into these multi-hop payments. What's really happening is everyone along the way is kind of exchanging Bitcoin for signatures. And so there are people who will spread FUD, remember fear, uncertainty, and doubt, misinformation, and say, oh, it's a system of IOUs. And you can see, if you read through the paper, you can see why it would be viewed that way. That's not totally crazy to question that and to ask that, is it just a system of IOUs and what happens if someone doesn't pay? But like I said, go back and read through the infographics and it explains why basically you can't cheat someone, or it would be very, very, very difficult to cheat someone, and the risk of getting scammed in this is so low that it's almost negligible. And so because you're basically paying someone and then they are trading the signature and then you're trading the signature on for the next person and they are paying you back the Bitcoin that you paid to the first person, I hope that makes sense the way I'm saying it. Again, look at the infographics. Then basically your Bitcoin just goes to that person. And again, none of this is actually recorded to the blockchain. It is on the Lightning Network and there are invoices because of the way that Lightning works, but there's a little more fungibility and a little more anonymity in Lightning payments than in main blockchain payments. I hope I explained that well. It's probably a little confusing if you don't know what Lightning is. Go look it up, please. I don't know, I've said it a bunch of times. Go look at the infographics. They do a great job of explaining it. Okay, let's move on a little bit. There are right now three implementations of Lightning. Now, Lightning is not proprietary. It is an open source protocol based on the Bolt specifications, B-O-L-T. Bolt stands for Basis of Lightning Technology, and this is basically the specifications required to create an implementation of Lightning. So right now, there are three groups. There is Lightning Labs, there is Async, and there is Blockstream, and all three of them have an implementation of Lightning. Now, I've heard that there's actually a fourth group out of Japan that is working on another implementation of Lightning. So competition is great. Competition, one, there's a little bit of a decentralization there, but competition, just from a consumer perspective, means people have to work harder to compete and to keep up, and so quality goes up and price goes down. I mean, I guess most of these things are free to some extent, so price is kind of questionable there, but the quality goes up because you've got to compete with somebody else to get your product out there, and so that people will use your product instead of the other product. So competition's great. We welcome competition. Okay, so you have these three groups that are creating it, and there are some wallets out there. Most of them are still really recommended for you to use on the test net and not on the main net. There is Lightning Labs created LND, which is Lightning Network Daemon, and that is a command line interface. Blockstream has created their command line interface, which is called C-Lightning. And then Async has the Eclair wallet, which is actually a fully developed wallet. I say fully developed. It is actually a mobile wallet that is out there and you can use, but it's for Lightning, they recommend you only use it for testnet right now. Now, Jack Mallers has created the Zap wallet, which is a desktop wallet that is built on top of LND, Lightning Labs LND. And then I'm trying to remember, Alex Bosworth has HTLC.me, which HTLC stands for hash time lock contracts, I think, which is part of that time lock hashing stuff that goes on inside Lightning. So look that up. But You don't have to understand that to use HTLCme. HTLCme is a web wallet. So, you know, I'm always kind of wary of web wallets. They're not terrible, but again, if you don't have your private keys, do you really have it? But then again, is that really what's meant by the final implementation, since this is a test environment? I don't know. That stuff remains to be seen. Okay, so we've talked about the three groups making these Lightning implementations. We've talked about the various wallets available out there. And you can use command line if you're comfortable with that, but a lot of people aren't comfortable using the command line. When I say command line, if you don't even know what I'm talking about, then you really don't need to be using it. But command line is like when you open up a little window where you're actually typing in commands into the computer and executing them that way instead of having a mouse clicking on buttons. Or in the case of a mobile wallet, a touchscreen clicking on buttons. Now, we've talked about Blockstream before. They are the guys that have the... I say guys, I don't mean that like only males. I just meant they're the group that has the blockchain streaming satellite orbiting. It's three geosynchronous orbit satellites. Anyway, but so they have their implementation, which they call C-Lightning. And they built something that they call Lightning Charge on top of that, which is a micropayments processor. Remember, this is some of the frustration by various groups of, oh, I can't use my Bitcoin to buy coffee. You know, never mind that that's not why Bitcoin was created. It was created to free us from the manipulative fiat currency powers that be. But hey, if you want to buy coffee with it, now you can, or very soon you can, because now we have micropayments. So Blockstream built Lightning Charge. It's a micropayment processor. And in order to kind of test this out, they created, along with that, a plugin to use Lightning Charge with WooCommerce, which WooCommerce, if you don't know, is a popular plugin that lets you set up online stores. So if you want to sell shirts or whatever. And so Blockstream created a WooCommerce Lightning Charge store so that people could test using mainnet to transact and buy stickers and shirts and hoodies. And it was kind of gimmicky, to be sure. I mean, it's still there. It's not was. It's gimmicky. And that's fine, though, because the point was to test and troubleshoot Lightning on the mainnet. And they said, you know, be careful. Don't use a lot of money. This still has a lot of bugs. Be warned. And so they gave all the proper warnings and cautions, but said, hey, it's here if you want to try it out. And so now, a couple of weeks ago, they had what they called, back in March, they had what they called their week of laps. Laps being Lightning apps. And I don't like names like this. I don't like cutesy names, but it works. The Lightning apps are pretty cool. So they had created that WooCommerce one, and now this independent developer, Nadav Igvi, I hope I said his name right, came up with seven more Lightning apps. And they all kind of follow similar themes, and so we're just going to talk about them real quick and go through these, because they're neat, and they just kind of point to what could be in the future. Okay, so the first Lightning app, because I refuse to keep calling them laps, I'm just going to say Lightning apps, I don't care, is FileBazaar. Now, FileBazaar basically allows people to pay and use micropayments. And when we say micropayments, what we're talking about here is small denominations, because again, this is part of what makes Lightning great. You know, if you want to buy $5 worth of Bitcoin, percentage-wise, you're paying a substantial transaction fee. Because remember, transaction fees are based on the data size on in each block that you take up with that transaction. And there's a certain minimum size on each transaction, because you have the way that the transactions are set up, you have a header and a closer on that transaction, and then you have all this data in the middle. And so you're always going to have that you're necessarily going to have that header and footer. I'm sure there's more proper names for those, but those sections are always going to be there. And then what changes is that chunk in the middle. And that's why batching is really nice, because you don't have to have that header and footer on times 10 transactions or whatever. You can fit all of that stuff in the middle and have just one set of header and footer. Okay, so let's go back to FileBazaar. Now, the transactions and the micropayments were, it's not that they were impossible, but they didn't really make economic sense, because you want to pay $5 for a cup of coffee, and now you're paying $1 or $2 in transaction fees. The transaction fees have gone down since then. This was all, you know, back in the end of 2017, but it doesn't make sense to pay a 25% transaction fee on top of your transaction, right? So, but now you've got these micropayments, and FileBazaar allows micropayments for digital files. So whether that's documents or images, those are kind of the big ones. There's probably some other things, maybe music. I'm not really sure. I mean, I guess you could, whatever. Any digital file, basically. And so, again, Lightning works on the system of requests and invoices. And so you can, by using FileBazaar, directly send requests and invoices and connect artists or digital file creators to the customer without having to get on some big content platform, which is what they kind of had to do prior to this. You know, think of something like, I don't know, DeviantArt, although DeviantArt, I don't think you really buy art on it. It's just a gallery. But think of some gallery type websites where artists go and they have a bunch of artists and you can buy their stuff, but you're basically buying it from that third party. The artist submits the art to that third party, that collector, if you will, that store, and then you buy from that store. Well, this way you bypass that middleman, and through the Lightning Network you can pay for your art, and it can be expensive or not expensive, right? Okay, so second Lightning app is Lightning Publisher for WordPress. And so this is similar to FileBazaar, but it allows bloggers, news sites, etc. to create a system that allows readers to buy access to individual articles with Lightning micropayments. So I'm sure you've gone to, who's done it recently? Forbes, I think, has this paywall. And it's like, you go to Forbes and they let you read for about 30 seconds, and then they throw up this paywall and they're like, oh, sorry, you have to be a member and pay for Forbes. Never mind, I'll go find similar information somewhere else, right? That's what I do. But what if you could buy the article for like 25 cents, right? Maybe you'd just do it. And especially if you didn't have to go through the process and sign up for all this junk and, you know, put a bunch of personal information. What if it just threw up a little QR code and you could scan it with your phone and you'd do that invoice and request back and forth and you just pay for it almost instantaneously over Lightning and it would open up? I'm a lot more inclined to pay for that. So it allows you to do that. And like I said, you could do it individual articles. You might could do a subscription, although I'm not sure how you would do that. But let's just say for now, individual articles on an article by article basis. So news sites, magazine websites, just, you know, your stay at home mom blogger, whoever, you can charge per article. You don't have to charge much, but then you're making a little revenue stream there over Lightning. And again, remember, we're still talking Bitcoin. Lightning is just kind of this side network that, again, eventually settles back to the blockchain. So, all right, third Lightning app is NanoTip. Now, we've been talking about this system of requests and invoices. Now, this makes tipping with Bitcoin a little bit tricky. So I don't know if you guys have noticed, if you go, so for like my site, and I have the donate page, like bottomshelfbitcoin.com/donate, and I always say you have to have a PayNim enabled wallet. Because what happens is if you just throw up an address on there. So let's just say I put the public address for a wallet that I have, the little QR code on there. Well, it's really easy. You just scan it and send it from any wallet. But the problem is that by just leaving that static address on there, it makes blockchain analysis programs can start looking at that. And if I'm getting a bunch of donations, everyone who's sending to that static address starts to get correlated and they start to get linked up somehow. And so they start to look for patterns and things like that. But through PayNim, that kind of bypasses that because it kind of creates this scrambled middle system in there. Like I said, you have to have a PayNim enabled wallet like Samurai. And I'll include links to all of these things on bottomshelfbitcoin.com/10. That'll be the show notes. You can go there and get links to all of these things, and I'll include the links to the infographics as well. But basically, NanoTip, you go in and you say how much you want to pay, and then it, by doing that, it sends a signal back, and then it creates a request, an invoice, and then sends you the invoice, and then you pay anyway. It makes more sense if you go. They've got a little animated GIF that shows how it works. And so look at that. Because like I said, main blockchain payments, Bitcoin, you run into issues just doing using a static address on there. The longer that it sits there and the more addresses send to it, then, you know, you have privacy issues. But it's difficult to just throw a static address up. You can't really just throw a static address up over Lightning because it works on the system of invoices. Remember, we said the routing requires this basically passing on of signatures and these invoices. And so that's what NanoTip creates. I'm probably over explaining this. Just go and look at the link. Okay, so what is this? 1, 2, 3, 4. Number 4 is PaperCall. Now, PaperCall is similar to FileBazaar or Publisher, but with API calls. If you don't know what APIs are, don't worry. That's a programming thing. So big sites will make certain amounts of data public in what's called an API. And then if you create a program, you can go out and grab that data out of their API, application programming interface, and then use that data however you want for your own purposes. Now consider a big site like CryptoWatch or CoinMarketCap, something like this, and they've got all these people doing all these API calls. That's all bandwidth, and it's all little, but it's a ton of it. And already, there are websites that put limits on how often you can hit their API and pull data. Because if you're constantly pulling it, you're using up their bandwidth, you're using up their data for their hosts, for their web hosts, right? And so at some point you're costing them money. And so that's why they put caps. And I think there are some that use memberships with username, password combinations for you to go out and pull that data if you are going to be using a higher number and using it more often. But think about it like this. If instead they could say it's 5 Satoshis per call or whatever, then they're making a small revenue stream off of each person who's using their API. Now that seems like not much, but you got to understand how many people are using it at any one time. Now this creates, you know, it's a little bit here and there, but it starts to add up and they can offset their cost of hosting or whatever. So on the one hand, you go, oh, that's frustrating because now everyone's going to start charging, but the amount that they're going to be charging is very little per user, and it will add up for them, and everybody wins, really. You pay, but it's a very small amount, and it probably means a more robust service in the end. Okay, so Lightning app number 5 is Nano POS. POS stands for point of sale, not the other POS that you were thinking of. I know you were thinking it. So this is just a simplified point of sale integration for vendors. You know, you think of farmer's market or the hot dog stand or whatever, to be able to accept Lightning payments. And again, all of this stuff is really still on testnet, but it's mostly to prove a point that, hey, this can be done. The code for all of these is on GitHub, I believe. And so you can already start taking this and integrating it into your own application. And then, okay, so with Nano POS, basically you could take, if you had a system set up, I mean, how many vendors do you see all the time now that have some sort of tablet, you know, iPad or something like that, and you go and they punch it in instead of having a cash register with physical buttons, right? And then they turn the thing around and you swipe your card or, you know, you have the phone with the NFC chip and bleep bloop, and then it scans it, right? Apple Pay or Samsung Pay or something like that. So this would be a similar thing, but over Lightning. Okay, so then the sixth Lightning app is IfPayTT. If you're familiar with IFTTT or IFTTT, it stands for If This Then That. And IfPayTT is a similar setup. It's like pay per call, but think about it for non-programmers. So IFTTT allows you to log into their service and you can link all these different accounts of yours. Now, there's some privacy concerns there, but hey, whatever. If that's your thing, go for it. You can create, like I use it when I post a new episode. I've started now using it to automatically, then it posts to Twitter for me. And that's just one little thing that just kind of simplifies and automates that process for me. So it's one less thing I've got to do when I post a new episode. So you can go in and create your own little, what they call applet, and you can kind of connect these different things without having to know programming. Based on the services that they already offer, you can just kind of connect them in between and say, here's your trigger point, and then here's the outputs, here's the things that it does when you do that. And so if PayTT would be over Lightning, and it would allow you to say, okay, if you receive a Lightning payment, then it does this. And it's very open-ended, I realize that. But again, these are built so that then you can take it and build on top of it. Okay, and then the last Lightning app is actually a jukebox. And this is kind of a practical implementation of several of these things. It really is essentially like if PayTT with a music player attached. I think they attached it to YouTube for this. You can go and look at it. But they're just kind of reimagining older technology updated with newer payment systems. Basically, you would be able to use a Lightning payment to then trigger and choose a song from a list. You know, if you're too young to remember what a jukebox is, you put money in, you select a song from the available songs they have on the machine. It would play, old ones would play records, newer ones, I say newer, like in the 90s, maybe in the 2000s, would play CDs. You might still find them if you go to like a Pizza Hut or a Pizza Inn in a small town. Sometimes they'll still have them. I've seen them in some random places still here and there. But anyway, I think they're interesting. We're just talking about jukeboxes here, not Lightning payment. Jukeboxes are interesting. I don't kind of like the idea of forcing everyone else to listen to your music. But hey, the store owner's making money, so what do they care, right? To some extent, as long as it's not super disruptive and then they lose customers. Okay, so the jukebox is basically, it creates a Lightning invoice and you pay it and then you get to do it. And it's essentially a physical thing built on top of IfPayTT. And so jukebox to me doesn't mean much, but if you take the next step and say, okay, what about vending machines? Right? You don't really see Bitcoin vending machines out there. And a lot of that is because the price fluctuation for so long was so up and down. Although the last week or so, we've really had a fairly stable price. But, you know, if you got to a point, again, with Lightning, you can make micro payments. So let's say you could then make a payment to this vending machine and get your Coke or whatever. Or what was my Dr. Pepper and Combos, that's what it was, Dr. Pepper and Combos, although I don't get those out of vending machines, those are special gas station foods, but you could see this happening, right? You could see creating a vending machine that worked with this Lightning payment protocol, so very cool. So that's going to wrap up those seven Lightning apps plus the WooCommerce app, which I think may be the best one or the most functional right now, the one that you could actually really use. And then the other ones, like I said, are all available. The code's available on GitHub to kind of play around with. And again, if you're not a programmer, IfPayTT is something you should really look at. And I'm excited to see where Lightning goes. Something you should maybe do is download the Eclair wallet if you have an Android phone. I don't know that they have it available for iOS, but if you have an Android, you can go and download the Eclair wallet. Now, I think they have actually released a mainnet version, so look and see if there's a distinction between the testnet version and the mainnet version of the Eclair wallet in the Google Play Store. But you can download this wallet and you can set up testnet funds. There are what we call faucets online where you put in your address and it will send you testnet Bitcoin. And then you can go to something like Starblocks or Block and Jerry's, which are these kind of fake, the site is really there and it allows you to make testnet Lightning payments. You don't actually get fake Starbucks or fake Ben and Jerry's, but it's just fun to see how fast it is and to test and make sure it's working. And then I think they have kind of a system there if something went wrong where you can kind of fill out some reports and give them some feedback. So sometimes it's just fun to see how fast it really is. But anyway, go check those things out. Again, bottomshelfbitcoin.com/10 will be the show notes. And that's really going to wrap it up for today. Again, if you guys want to support the show, please go on iTunes or Stitcher, give us a good review, preferably 5 stars. Share the episodes with your friends, post it to Twitter, post it to Facebook or whatever. Come back and keep listening to those market minutes in between. I know I didn't do a lot last week, but this next week, hopefully I'm doing better. And if you want to support us financially, you can go to bottomshelfbitcoin.com/donate. I've got an address there. If you have a PayNim enabled wallet, it won't work if you have just a regular wallet. If you want to become a patron, I would very much appreciate it. Patreon.com/bottomshelfbitcoin. And you can also buy the Tuttle Twins books. Those books, they're geared towards kids, but they're still applicable towards adults. And they explain concepts of liberty and free market economics and all of these things. bottomshelfbitcoin.com/kidsbook will get you not necessarily a discount, although they're almost always running discounts there. But your purchase of those books will give a kickback to us making the show here. So we would greatly much appreciate it. And greatly much is not a word. Very much. We would very much appreciate it. And that's all. Come back again next week. Like I said, Patricia Estevel, who does the infographics for Bitcoin Design, will be on talking about her infographics as well as some Lightning-related research and user experience stuff that she just put out. Come back again next week. For Bottom Shelf Bitcoin, I'm Josh Humphrey. Thanks for listening.